Now, earlier this year, Mark Morris published his excellent book, The Anglo-Saxons, A History of the Beginnings of England. One of the reviews that caught our eye was published in The Spectator and written by none other than our own Member of Parliament for Brentwood and Ongar, Alex Burghart. So, very good morning to you. How are you?
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Lovely to have a guest live in the studio. Alex, you read history at Oxford, so Anglo-Saxon England is something that you've had an interest in for a long time.
Yes. I mean, more years than I care to remember now. I'm just thinking as you were speaking, it's about 25 years since I started studying English history before the Norman Conquest. I fell in love with it in my first term as an undergraduate, and I taught it for a while after I left Oxford. I did my doctorate and I went to teach at King's College London, I've never given it up. It's my hobby now, and a very nice hobby it is to have.
And why did you choose Anglo-Saxon England as a specific area of interest, as opposed, say, to Roman Britain or the Normans?
I had a very inspirational tutor in my first term at university, and I didn't really know anything about medieval history at all up until that point. I'd grown up with sort of an understanding of Roman Britain. I've been sort of taken to various ruins by my parents. There was a big Iron Age hill fort near where I grew up in Dorset, which I used to play in. But I'd never studied Anglo-Saxon England at all. And in my first term, I had this chap called Patrick Wormald, who was this extraordinary brain and really electric mind, highly charismatic, seemed to know everything. And he made it all come alive, and he made it seem not only interesting, but important. So I caught the bug off him.
For your PhD, you wrote The Mercian Polity, 716 to 918. Was this difficult to research and to write? You'll forgive me for saying the wrong words there.
No. It was quite difficult to research. It took me quite a few years to mug up on everything. And there's not a huge amount of written evidence for the period. Yeah, for the 8th centuries and the 9th centuries and the early 10th centuries, the amount of written material that survives is quite small. But it means that an enormous amount has been written about that small material. And you have to get your head around all of the different perspectives, all the different people who've written about it over the past 150 years. And then you have to try and make sense of it all. So you have to sort of deconstruct it and then reconstruct it. But it was an area that had not been given as much attention in the previous few decades. So I wanted to unpack it and see if I could make sense of it. And I think I did, but unfortunately, it took me about 100,000 words to say it. So it's not readily accessible to anyone who might be listening.
Is Mark Morris someone you know personally? Because like you, he was at Oxford and King's College as well.
I've never met Mark. I've exchanged a couple of emails with him in the past. He's a very impressive historian, and his speciality is actually England after the Norman Conquest. And so the book was really interesting because it was almost an outsider's view of Anglo-Saxon history, and I think it gave him a unique perspective actually on what happened. He was sort of seeing it with fresh eyes. And it really came through. I mean, it's a very good book. But I don't know Mark. I hope we get to, now some of the restrictions on our lives have been lifted, I hope I'm going to get a chance to sit down and have a cup of tea with him.
In your article, you started by saying that you were pleased that he uses the term Anglo-Saxon. So can't people say this anymore?
So this term has very unfortunately come in for a bit of criticism recently, not by everybody, but by it's certainly there are some people in the States who particularly gotten upset about it because they think that the term is associated with white supremacy and with imperialism and. Obviously there have been white supremacists and imperialists in the past who've used the term, but the people who were alive before the Norman Conquest also used the term. And I think the point you start to tell people that you know, the past was the moment you start to have to edit what people were saying in the past because you find it uncomfortable, is the moment you can't really study history anymore. That and that the past has to be taken on its own terms. So if Alfred the Great, who was king between 871 and 899, was called by the people around him King of the Anglo-Saxons, well, we can't say we're not going to use that term. And so I just sometimes I think a little bit of common sense has to be brought to bear on this issue. I was very glad that Mark called his book the Anglo-Saxons, because it's a term that many of them would have recognised, and it adequately sums up this period between the fall of the Roman Empire and the Norman Conquest, when at the start you have, we know that a group of people from Angeln, which is in modern-day Denmark, and Saxony, which is sort of west northwest Germany, came to Britain, and partially by invitation, partially by conquest, and together they formed the Anglo-Saxons. They formed this new kingdom, which ultimately came to be called England.
What other authors writing on history would you recommend to listeners?
Gosh, well, there's so many good people writing. I've actually spent a lot of time recently rereading the work of another one of my tutors, who was a man called James Campbell, who died in 2016, who was the archetypal old Don, you know, sort of big, thick glasses, smoked a pipe, you know, liked a drink or two, and had an amazing sort of storehouse mind, had read everything and could remember it, and a brilliant, brilliant brain. And he was very interested in the Anglo-Saxons too, and he wrote a lot of essays about how the government of Anglo-Saxon England was actually much more modern than it had been given credibility for. And by that he said, you know, that if you look at the counties of England, they were created by the Anglo-Saxons, all of the shires, that the legal system that we have originated with the Anglo-Saxons, the monarchy, the shape of the kingdom, the currency, all of these fundamental things about our country were developed by the Anglo-Saxons, developed before the Norman Conquest, and of course the language. And so the legacy of their period has been with us for over 1,000 years. And has shaped, you know, who we are and what we do. And you know, James Campbell could really bring this story alive in a way that I find really compelling. So although he's not writing at the moment, I'm reading a lot of him at the moment.
That was going to be the final question, actually. Do you get time to indulge your passion in Anglo-Saxon England, or does the day job restrict it somewhat now?
Well, it does. It restricts it quite a lot. You've got to, whatever you do, you've got to have something else in your life and in your brain that's not work. And, some people like to jog, other people like to paint. I like to read about medieval history, and but yes, I don't have a great deal of time to do that right now. But sometimes late at night or on a weekend, you need to pick up a book that'll take your mind off of the day job, and it's very nice to have that to turn back to as a hobby.
Maybe even a series for radio.
Oh, you will, if you're offering.
I think that would be a good idea, actually. You can come record in here any time. Doesn't have to be during daytime.
We could do a few history podcasts together.
Yes, excellent. Thank you so much for coming in. It's fascinating to talk to you, Alex, and hopefully we'll see you in the studio again.
Real pleasure. Thanks for having me in.